Actually, meme trade of the week might go to the internet.
Oh my god. I think the internet heard you.
It's like, what do you mean? I had some hits. I don't know why the internet is humbler.
Imagine a world where every word ever written, every picture ever painted, and every film ever shot could be viewed instantly in your home via an information superhighway, a high-capacity digital communications network. It all comes down to computers communicating. And in fact, that's already happening on something called the internet, that anyone in the world with a computer and a modem to connect it to a telephone line can subscribe to.
All right, welcome to the Pinstripe LA podcast, where we've watched some pretty crappy Yankees baseball over the weekend and past few days, aside from Tuesday night. I'm Andrew Burns here with Matt Ferencik. Is it Matt Ferencik?
Ferencik.
Okay. I know you mentioned the other day that I kept mispronouncing it.
Honestly, I'm oblivious to it, so it doesn't even matter.
Okay, so Matt Ferencik and Matt Provenzano. I didn't mess that one up, right?
That is good.
All right. I'm all over this. Anyway, Yankees have not been playing so well lately. Offense has been dead quiet. They lost games to the Mariners, and they lost series to the Rays, and
they've lost 5 of their last 7.
However, they win.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement on that.
Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, it's kind of like 2013 for a week, so pretty much unwatchable. I think the worst part is watching CC try to adjust himself, and you can tell that he's changing himself, which is much different than last year, and he's still struggling a little bit. It looks like he's getting better, and there was an article recently about how he looks like he's getting better, but it's still difficult to watch him painfully struggle, even though he actually this year is trying to change his mechanics a little bit.
Yeah, he did.
So that was, I think that was one of the more frustrating things of the week. And the other one that I thought, well, I guess on the other token, good sign, was watching Kuroda pitch really well on Tuesday night, and he looked like vintage Hirooki Kuroda. So that was,
yeah, that was
on the other token. Yeah, on the other side of the coin, I think that looked really good. And I was really happy. It's just, honestly, they just can't hit, and they've just been dreadful. I mean, there are 5 players who are above 100 WRC plus who have at least 75 plate appearances. So about half of the lineup is all right, and half of the lineup is bad.
Huzzah.
And it sucks when half of the lineup that's bad is Brian Roberts, Derek Jeter, Brian McCann, and Soriano, who seemingly keep getting put in the middle of the lineup, and they just keep being bad.
Well, you know, when you're bad, the best strategy I find is to keep being bad.
Yep.
And to keep putting yourself in a position to be bad when other people are on base or when you should be on base.
Right.
That's what Jason Nip says.
Always hit into double plays with runners in scoring position. That's the Jason Nick's school of hitting.
It was funny. I was sitting in an astronomy class, and my professor was teaching us about the moons of Pluto. Mm-hmm. And apparently Pluto has a moon called Nix.
Oh, yeah, I knew that, actually.
So I just like assumed that the reason why is just because that Major League Baseball had launched him into space because he was so bad, and the only place that he could stay is orbiting Pluto.
Brittily orbiting. Sometimes it falls down and goes off orbit.
Sometimes it makes it so the other moons can't complete their orbit because he's like gets in their way.
I'd believe that. But yeah, Yankees just not very impressive. And again, CeCe Sabathia got pounded the other day. It seems like every single hit, unlike some of his other starts, it seemed like every single hit was just roped, and he was gone. I was at that game. got pounded all over the place, and the only reason the game even stayed close is because Alfredo Aceves is apparently alive and kicking.
Well, The thing is, I actually give CC the benefit of the doubt more this year than I have last year for a couple of reasons. First of all, his BABIP was like 80 points too high. Mm-hmm. That's just something I think is going to regress pretty quickly. The other thing is that his home run to fly ball ratio is like 21%, which is just not a sustainable number. So I think he's just giving up home runs at just an unsustainable rate. And other than that, he's walking fewer people than he has in the past, and he's striking out 9.7 per nine, which is almost two higher than his career average. So and part of me is saying, yeah, he looks pretty bad out there. But another part of me is saying, but is he that bad? Because it looks like he is striking out more people, and he's working both sides of the plate. And even though he's only throwing 87, 88, he has mixing that cutter in there. And I don't know. I think that he's going to get better. Like, I don't think he's going to stay this bad the whole – because he's got a 5.75 ERA, but he's got a 4.14 FIP, and he's got a 2.91 xFIP. So – part of me is saying, yeah, I think he's that bad, but I think a bigger part of me is saying I think that he'll kind of level out to like a not a great level, but maybe something we saw, not something we've seen on the Yankees, but maybe hit the level that he was pitching when he was on the Indians, which is pretty good.
The one thing that just makes me hesitate about it is because, you know, Phil Hughes had pretty good control too, and you know, he struck out a decent number of people, but his problem was just giving up a ton of hits, and if a bunch of people are getting hits off CC, maybe they won't at the rate they are with, like, the high BABIP, but they could still definitely put the ball in play, and it seems much more likely now that we'll see, like, a high hit per nine from CC than maybe in recent years, just because his stuff isn't as good.
Yeah, I think part of it could also be that the infield defense is horrendous.
That doesn't help, no.
that's a problem.
So I think if you really want to isolate his performance from his team, it's sometimes hard to separate how much of it is the defense being the defense and him actually pitching poorly. And I think that's a hard thing to distinguish. And I'd have to look at – I'm actually going to take a look at his spray chart because you'd really like to see what his actual batted ball data looks like for this year, and are these balls that are home runs being absolutely crushed, or are they like total cheapies? So, I mean, if I look at this,
I know in the recent start a lot of those hits were crushed, but I do know that in other starts there had been a lot of like ground balls, the hole, like past the diving Jeter. Actually, not, we haven't even so much been getting diving Jeter this year, just kind of like half reaching.
Well, the thing about his spray chart that's really interesting is, speaking of that, is that a lot of his balls have been hit on the left side. Mm-hmm. Most of the ground balls have hit on the left side, and we've seen that the left side of the infield has just been terrible.
Subpar.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, basically, what could be contributing to that is that it hasn't really stabilized yet, and that he's letting up a lot of hits on the left side of the infield, where the left side of the infield is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean that could definitely be part. I think that could definitely be part of it. And in terms of the home runs, I think it's gonna level out over time. He's letting up the home runs outright. They're not like cheapies, but I think that just given the amount of fly balls he's allowed, it's something that is like screaming small sample. So
yeah, I've given up more home runs than normal. He has given up more home runs in recent years than he did in, like, vintage CC time. And, you know, when you're playing in a home park where there are going to be a lot of home runs, then it kind of has to come with the territory.
I think that the trend is heading in the direction because he went from home run fly ball ratio in 2011 of 8.4, that was his best season, to then 12.5 and then 13. So even if it stabilizes at 13, which is not good, but even if it did, because he was still successful in 2012 with that number still around 13%, right now it's around 22, which is not sustainable for really any major league pitcher who's striking out people at the rate he is. Because if he was really that bad and was allowing that many home runs, then no one really should be striking out against him either. Mm-hmm. So, I think is gonna level out, and he's allowed more ground balls. He's for the first time in his career, his ground ball percentage is actually over 50%, Well, no, first time since 2010, actually.
Probably from the cutter.
So, yeah, it's because of the cutter. So I see that trend as a good thing. He's allowing more ground balls, which could be bad considering the infield defense, but he's keeping the ball on the ground. He's striking out more hitters. He's not walking as many hitters. So I think that it will get better. I think there's hope.
Well, definitely be something to watch.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, up to this point, I still feel better than I did when he took them out when he'd start last season.
Oh, yeah,
but
I agree. He does seem to be a little bit more comfortable than he did last year, but still.
Yeah.
Well, still not great, but.
No, it's, yeah.
But that'll be something to watch. As you mentioned, Kuroda looked very good, but, you know, the ground balls will just worry me all year considering the Yankees infield. I mean, it's not Kuroda's fault. It's just what he has to work with. But we're already starting to see, like, the effects of not having great infield defense. Aside from Teixeira, even he's been a little shaky.
Yeah. The thing is, like, I think people have to separate the blame, quote-unquote, from the pitchers to the infield defense. Because, fun fact, Kuroda and Tanaka's FIP are actually exactly the same. Mm. But the difference is that Tanaka's ERA is so much lower and Kuroda's ERA is much higher. And the difference is that Kuroda, well, I mean, Tanaka, other than striking out more people and walking fewer, he's had a left on base percentage of 90.1%, which is not going to stay that way.
You. Tanaka going to prove you wrong.
He's just going to leave everybody on base. Yeah, so Kuroda's been pitching, I think, pretty well. Tanaka's also been pitching pretty well, don't get me wrong, but I think the duo of them are going to be the strongest in the rotation, depending on how Pineda shakes out.
That wouldn't be surprising. Pineda is missing. I guess, well, at least he's now finally on the disabled list after being suspended, and they have forced the Yankees to play with 24 men for a little while there, but
yeah.
It's a real sticky situation. Womp womp.
I mean, in the end, the suspension really only was hurting the Yankees. It didn't really hurt him.
Yeah.
Because he was hurt anyway, so all it really did was penalize the Yankees and give them a 24-man roster.
Yeah. And, I mean, the only thing that they did to, you know, adjust once they actually had the free roster spot was to activate Brendan Ryan. Which, while not nothing, isn't like, oh, man, that'll make the difference. They're rolling with, like, 13 pitchers, including Pineda, anyway, and that's abnormal.
Yeah. I think that will make a big difference. I think that his defense is, because the thing is, it really comes down to whether Brendan Ryan is going to hit, and I don't think he will. But if he comes in as a late-inning replacement, and I think that Joe Girardi has to be very strategic with where he gets put in, that he shouldn't pair a fly ball pitcher and Brendan Ryan, because then essentially his defense becomes null and void, and then he just becomes a bad hitter. So I think that if he's paired with a ground ball,
that would make sense. I mean, if you put him on with, say, Kuroda pitching, then maybe Ryan will get to a lot of those balls that Jeter would not be able to get to, and because Kuroda gives up, I think, harder ground. I mean, this might just be from, like, watching, eyeballing how the starts have been going, but the ground balls that Kuroda gives up are harder hit than, like, Tanaka's ground balls, so they're more likely to skip through the infield. I don't know how you would quantify but
you'd have to go through the I mean, you could use Baseball Savant if you've ever used that before, and that shows the spray charts, and oftentimes they have videos attached to the spray chart. But I'm just looking at the batted ball data for Kuroda, and most of the singles he's had are most of the ground outs he's had have been on the backside of the infield. I guess that's the only way you can kind of quantify it.
Yeah.
Is that very few of them are on the inner part of the infield.
Yep.
So there's like the base path. So only one, two, three, four have been inside the base paths. So the rest of the ground outs were all in the deep, deep mid or deeper part of the infield. I guess that's how you would say that those were harder hit.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, on the plus side, David Phelps was pretty good filling in for Pineda the other day.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah.
Pleasant surprise. Threw five and a third innings, and if it was, again, with a little bit better infield defense, he could have lasted a little bit longer, and maybe he wouldn't have even given up those runs.
Yeah, he's an all right back end of the rotation. He's like a spot starter. I would never trust him more than just a handful of appearances.
Really. I like him more than Nuno. I'll say that much.
Yeah, Nuno kind of scares me just because he's a soft thrower. At least Phelps has. I'm not a huge fan of Phelps' stuff, but at least he has a put away curveball and.
Yeah.
You know, while Nuno is kind of just like, I'm going to softball throw this to you, and I hope you don't hit it.
Mm-hmm. It's like he's already a junk balling lefty, and he's a rookie. The weirdest thing. But one of the other things that happened over the weekend was this is just two nights ago, the bullpen meltdown, not really helped by Laz Diaz, wildly inconsistent strike zone, but they walked, five, six men?
Five,
yeah. And four by Kelly, I think. Or three by Kelly and one by Thornton and one by Claiborne, something like that.
It's pretty ugly, any way you slice it.
Yeah. And, I mean, I guess the bullpen has been so good this year that they were due for a bad one, I guess. And it just sucks that it had to happen. But, you know, you kind of hope that on most nights your offense can make up for it, but they just couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the bullpen data is a little skewed. I was reading something about how their ERA is a little bit higher. I think you have to compare the bullpen when the game is close versus when the game is kind of slipping away, because there were those blowout games where they would put in someone like, I don't know, like Chris LaRue.
Bruce Billings, yeah.
Or Bruce Billings, and they would get blown out, and it would skew the bullpen data because it would say, oh, they allowed, you know, however it was, like eight runs or something. And really, it was just because they threw in a mop-up role.
Yeah, and they're just like, we don't care.
I think that, yeah, exactly. I don't know if anyone saw Mitch Moreland pitch on Tuesday night.
Was he cracking 90 or something?
He threw 94 miles per hour.
What a troll.
Like he looks like a major league pitcher.
Hmm.
It was funny because I heard he was pitching, and then I went on. I thought it was like a pitcher because I thought they took him out, and then I saw that it was him, and he was throwing 94 miles. He was touching 94, but it was between 90 and 93 his whole inning.
Yes, the Rangers have a new bullpen.
Yeah.
Setup man, Mitch, you needed to come over from first base.
So he was no Dean Anna, and no Nick Swisher.
Maybe Seves could be a bullpen weapon as a long man, or maybe in a role similar to how he performed in 2009, which was pretty crazy. I mean, I think they might be asking a lot for him at this point, but even like a reduced version of that guy would be pretty effective.
Yeah.
He still throws hard. Definitely.
Yeah, he was good on Sunday.
I think he threw really five and a third, something like that.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's just a spot reliever. He did all right with the Red Sox in 2012.
Yeah, in 2011 as well. And like,
he really wasn't.
2013 was hot trash, but you know.
Yeah, he was.
But
it was only 37 innings.
Right. I think actually it was more like his second half of 2012 that was kind of, ooh, if I recall. Because that was when the Red Sox were spiraling out of control in last place, and it was delightful.
Yeah, was he the closer at one point?
I think he was, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Red Sox have really blown through closers a lot. I really wouldn't. I think if you told me about a year ago, or I guess a year and a half ago, that Andrew Bailey would be on the Yankees and would be on the DL, and Joel Hanrahan would be with the Tigers, I probably would not believe you.
You know, it's funny. I was like, Red Sox were like, oh, yeah, so we've acquired multiple closers for the 2013 season, and then the guy who ended up being, like, their actual bullpen ace didn't emerge till like, September, because they kept going through these crappy closers that got hurt.
Yeah, and Uehara was, like, terrible on every other team. I think he was on the Rangers, and he was just horrendous.
Yeah, he wasn't even on their playoff roster in 2010, I think.
Yeah, he was on the Orioles in 2000. Actually, he pitched really well in 2009. Yeah, in 2009 with the Orioles, he was really good. And then he had 2010 and 2011, he was actually not that bad. It was really just that 2012 season with the Rangers. He was just not.
Yeah.
But it was just interesting how he emerged from nowhere.
Was it 2011 that he was left off the Rangers playoff roster?
I think it was.
Was he on the Rangers at the end of 2011?
Yes, he was traded from the Orioles to the Rangers.
Yeah, that was the Chris Davis trade.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that is that is some trade for the Rangers. Oh well. But anyway.
And then they got rid of the valuable piece in Uehara.
Yeah.
Because they did get rid of Davis and he put up that huge season, but since he went to the Red Sox, since he was traded, he put up, 4.5 war.
He doesn't walk anyone either.
No, he walked nobody.
Did he get traded from the Rangers to the Red Sox?
I'm not sure.
Or was
sure.
He just signed as a free agent?
He was signed as a free agent in December of 2012.
Okay.
And it was basically just a one-year deal, $4.2 million, with a vesting option.
Yeah.
And basically just had a vest if he appeared in 55 games.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's
Anyways, yeah, sidetrack. But.
I like David Robertson in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of wish that he could have been used with two outs in the eighth inning, Tuesday night's game, so that Yankees didn't need to rely on a Brian Roberts homer to win it, but alas.
A win's a win, as they say.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah, no, I like Robertson. It's not Mo, but
no,
I don't know if you heard about Mo's book that came out. The Closer.
I heard about it, but just because the
Just because of the I saw him on Jon Stewart.
Yeah, I saw that too.
I saw him on Jon Stewart. He was pretty funny, and they didn't talk about the comment. I don't think the comment came out until the day after. But
Yeah,
I don't know how you guys feel about his comment saying that he'd rather have Pedroia over Cano.
I think Mo is entitled to his opinion, and I disagree with him, but I love him too much to care.
Yeah.
Kind of the way I feel about Mo is that I can't really say anymore because he's not playing, but it's like if he ever opens his mouth, like, shh, 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 just pitch.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to know because I don't want it to spoil. I think I read an article recently about how he wouldn't allow his son to go away to college.
No, he was at college, but then,
that's right.
Something like that.
That's right, because as a very strict man, he didn't want his, he wasn't comfortable with him being away. And I just read that, and I was
thought
like.
He didn't like the college environment at Quinnipiac, too, or.
It was partially, but it sounded like he.
I think his son.
Oh yeah. He wanted him to stay at home. But when I read that, I kind of felt the same thing. I was like, shh, just go out and pitch.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of things I would disagree about Mo about. Disagree with about Mo or.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
But it doesn't make me love him any less.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there are a lot of Yankees that have been great. I've done some weird things in their retirement. And if this is the worst, then, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that always happens with the book. Whenever they release the book, I remember Joe Torre's book.
Yep.
That he wrote with Tom Verducci was a bit of a, from what I heard, a bit of a doozy. I should read it.
Actually own the book. And I thought the book was pretty good because it's still like a mostly first-hand account of like all that went on with those Yankees teams for like 12 years. But then like toward the end when they got A-Rod was when it started getting all pissy and like with these stupid comments. And so I thought most of it was okay, but just these weird comments were just like, God, I don't care about what you think about A-Rod.
Oh, they didn't get, I guess they didn't get along, I'm assuming. Yeah, I figured that.
Well,
but
like, you basically referred to him as like not exactly these words, but basically as like a drama queen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. Let's not talk about Joe Torre.
This isn't the 2007 Pinstripe Alley podcast.
No. There was none.
No.
No, that Luis Vizcaíno.
The 2007 Pinstripe Alley podcast would have very different opinions about Jabba.
And Phil Hughes.
The future. Yeah. The big three.
Ian Kennedy. Ugh, what a sad time. What a great time, an optimistic time, but ended up being so sad.
Yeah.
Even though Ian Kennedy's a pretty good pitcher right now.
Is he? I thought he was kind of eh.
He's doing pretty well so far with the Padres. Checo.
He's also hot trash for the Diamondbacks last year, I think, and the year before.
He was. He was very bad in 2013. That's why he was traded. But he was pretty good in 2012.
Well, anyway.
I encountered a very interesting phenomenon, but something I see amongst Yankee fans, and this may be among all fans, but I ran across some people on Twitter who were very pissy about the Yankees' quote-unquote inability to score with runners in scoring position. Mm-hmm. And they kind of, people kind of think that it's this like rare thing that only happens to the Yankees, and that no other team has the problem with hitting runners in scoring position. And I read somewhere that apparently in the past, I think 5 years, the Yankees are hitting 105 WRC plus with runners in scoring position, I believe. And that's fifth in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. So I think I've come to the conclusion they're actually pretty good at hitting with runners in scoring position. Most teams are actually pretty horrible.
I think it's a common problem, but I think also a lot of teams still will hit roughly the same as they would without hitters in scoring position. But I also say that like Yankees of like 2009 through 2012 are very different than the ones of 2013 to 14. So I'm not sure how much I would compare those numbers.
Or people misconstrue, I think, runners in scoring position hits with like the team being good.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of, I think people think that if they were just to hit with runners in scoring position, they'd be good. But I think they kind of don't really realize that the reason why they're not hitting with runners in scoring position is because they're not good. Or because they're not playing well, you know?
I think.
Or they're not as good as people think.
The Yankees that won all those championships in the late 90s and early 2000s, a lot was made about how they were, you know, clutch hitters, knew what to do with the ball, but you know, they also just had a bunch of very good hitters on their team.
They're all just really good.
You had Bernie Williams, Paul O'Neill, Tino Martinez, Derek Jeter, Jorge Posada, Daryl Strawberry. There's a long list of really good hitters.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when people last during the World Series were talking about, and during the ALCS, talking about how David Ortiz was so clutch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people misconstrued just being clutch with just being a good player.
Mm-hmm.
And that oftentimes what people think is clutch is just you're just good.
Yep. That being said, some hitters do obviously that tend to maintain their regular season numbers or better in the playoffs. And that could be interpreted as something over a larger sample size. Like I think Jeter's career triple slash is roughly similar to his playoff but like again, higher caliber competition than the regular season.
Jeter's slash line is almost identical from between his career numbers and his playoff numbers, which is pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. But it's still too small of a sample to determine whether that's a quote unquote skill that he acquired or it's just his luck. And you know, if he kept playing in the playoffs, that it would, you know, bottom out or something.
Like over 140 games though or something like that.
I think
it's like almost a full season worth of playoff games.
It's almost a full season, but it's also spread across 20 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's like when people talk about facing a certain pitcher and they're like, "Oh, they're 10 for 20 against them." But like those 20 plate appearances are spread across 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like very difficult to draw an example because they're not drawn from a straight sample. It's like they're individual samples all put together.
I know why, but that reminds me of like in the 2009 World Series, Nick Swisher was really slumping, so Girardi benched him against Pedro Martinez for Jerry Hairston. And I think that was because Hairston had like good numbers against Pedro, but he hadn't actually faced him since like 2004 or something.
That's exactly.
But you know, he got a hit.
If you go 15 for 20, if you go 15 for 20 against a guy in your prime, and then you wait 10 years and you come back and it's like, oh, look at that, over that sample they were doing, like it could be skewed and weighted towards your prime years, and then as you get older you're playing worse, and you think they're like, oh, they're hitting well, over this playoff sample, when in fact it could be weighted more heavily to when you were just a better player.
Yeah.
So I think that was just something I noticed, and I think it'll all kind of just even out with the Yankees in terms of hitting runners in scoring position. But I do think that what hurts it is when you have hitters like Jeter hitting second, that's going to hurt.
Yeah, Jeter, he's had some hits recently, but he still doesn't really seem to find himself yet. I don't know. I think he's like the only regular without a homer at this point now.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me. He's 40. I mean, well, I don't know what people really expect.
Yeah, I don't really expect him to hit for too much power. Get some doubles in there, maybe.
I mean, I'm hoping he'll finish the season at about league average hitting, which I think would be really good.
Yeah, even league average for a shortstop, yeah. I take.
Because his defense has not been good at all, but...
No.
If he finishes at about a league average hitting, that's pretty tolerable.
Right.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's his last season, so I'm sure they have to start looking for a replacement, I think.
Yep. Well, worry about that when Bridge actually comes, I suppose. Well, anyway, I think that's probably about it for recent Yankees talk. Probably move on to our next segment. If you guys think we're good.
Yeah, we can move on.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's this that you have planned, Matt F?
Okay, well, last week we had Tanya on for the minor league reach out of the season so far. And I was going to do a game based on old-timey minor league teams. But we went really long last week, so I held it off to this week. So what this game is, you're going to guess whether... I'm going to give you a team name, and you're going to guess whether it's a fake or real minor league team from the late 1890s, last 1900s, or if they were fake.
All right.
Okay, so we will start with Andrew, and was there a team from Albany, Georgia, named the Albany Babies?
the Albany Babies?
Yes.
I'll say yes.
Yeah, they played in the South Atlantic Legion.
Yeah, I knew that one. I think they used that on the Cespedes Family Barbacast. They used that team name.
The Albany Babies.
Yeah, the Babies. Okay. Throw it at me.
Okay, Matt. Is there a team from the city of Hurricane, West Virginia called the Hurricane Tornadoes?
I'm going to say that's fake.
Okay, that is also correct.
That team doesn't exist?
No, they're
damn.
A figment of my imagination.
Was right. there another team called the Tornadoes? Yes, maybe. Yeah.
I'm sure there's been some, but...
Yeah. I mean, there's a cyclone.
That's true. Yeah. Is there actually a hurricane, West Virginia?
Yeah, that is a real city.
The more you know.
The less you know.
Okay. Andrew, is there a team from Delaware City, Delaware, called the Delaware Fellas?
Delaware Fellas? I'll say yes.
No.
Darn.
Delaware Fellas is actually... I got it from... an SNL skit where they parodied Jersey Boys. It's like a fake Jersey Boys parody.
Well, the sad thing is that I can totally buy it as like the 1890s team. It's like, oh yes, do you see the Delaware Fellas?
Oh yeah,
got some fellas together to play some ball, see?
We can play some baseball, two words.
I actually have an American history teacher in high school, and he actually plays 1890s baseball. Yeah,
like in the Conan O'Brien short.
It's like real. Like they have they play at a historical preserve, and they play all the rules like the 1890s. No gloves, the same uniforms. They have to use like the terms that they use for all the position players and the phrases like the hurler and the receiver.
The Brutus.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one of the best kind of a shorts from Conan O'Brien when he was on Late Night. He did a thing where he visited like an 1860s baseball thing, and he dresses up like it, and it's pretty much the greatest thing he's ever done. So. But anyway, continue.
Okay, Matt, is there a team from Mount Clemens, Michigan called the Mount Clemens Bathers?
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, they played in the Southern Michigan League.
Bathers. It's like, I can only imagine what the logos, or I guess they didn't have logos, but logos, like, would it just be, I just picture like someone in a bathtub.
It's the
with like a rubber ducky.
It's the Cialis logo.
Oh, God.
Just two baseball players in tubs next to each other.
Exactly.
Touching gloves.
Oh, boy.
Okay, Andrew. Petersburg, Virginia was the team called... Was there a team called the Petersburg Goobers?
I'm going to say no.
They were
oh
real.
Oh, my God. They actually called themselves...
The Virginia League.
They actually called themselves the Goobers.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Okay, Matt. Reading, Pennsylvania. The Reading Pretzels.
That sounds real, actually.
Yeah, they're real. They played in the Tri-State League.
Because the thing is with these is, like, a lot of them were named after, like, whatever they... Like, whatever the town was doing or... Like, whatever that those people's professions were. I'm assuming that town made, like, pretzels. Yeah, like, they were probably pretzel makers. That's why there were certain teams, like, called, like, the Lawyers.
Yeah.
The Masons. Like, they were just named after whatever profession they were.
So, the team of pretzels would be another good one for that question you threw into the Cespedes Barbacast. It was, like, if you had to go by a team that... It's the Pretzels. They would probably be one of the few teams that wouldn't do too well against like the Orioles.
No. Let's have a pretzel line in left field.
You throw the baseball and you kill the player.
Would have the same effect as a Banyas.
Yeah. That's true.
Ooh. Shots fired.
Oh, pretzel might be better than a Banyas.
At least maybe if it hits like the pretzel it won't like go flying away, whereas a Banyas dive might send it like 20 feet past
True.
Him. Okay, Andrew, was there a team from Lock Haven, PA, the home of my alma mater, called the Lock Haven Locksmiths?
I'm gonna say no.
Okay, yeah, that's correct. I made them up.
Someone
although
sounds
I did look.
Cool, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, between what Matt was saying with the name after professions and telling me called Lock Haven, I thought maybe I could get you guys one of that one, but.
What is Lock Haven, your school's mascot, actually?
We were the Bald Eagles.
I think Locksmiths is better.
Yeah.
That's actually a very powerful
mascot
position.
Our mascot has Twitter, and it is not the most fun-looking mascot. It's kind of terrifying.
I think that a locksmith is much more terrifying than a bald eagle because, like, the locksmith has a lot of power. Like, if you get locked out of your house or locked out of your car... Like, the locksmith has the power to, like, keep you out of your house. Like, they can deem you homeless.
Hmm.
Okay, the final team we have. Was there a team from Baker, Oregon called the Baker Bunchgrassers?
That's gotta be real. It sounds too fake.
It is. They play in the Pacific Interstate League.
Do they still play?
No.
Oh, damn.
No, that was like a late early 1900s league.
I think that there should be a White House petition to like revive all of these teams. They should be reinstated. I think the world would be a much better place if we had teams like that and the Pretzels and the Locksmiths and all those. The Locksmiths aren't real, but we should have all those teams.
Yeah, the Sugarland Skeeters. Wait a minute.
Those are real. That team exists.
Got Kazmir's alma mater. I think current home of Tracy McGrady, pitcher. Oh man, I wonder how he's doing. Has their season started yet?
I think it
is. I'm not sure.
I remember seeing that he made the team at least. I think.
Yeah, he definitely made the team. I'd have to see. I'd have to see what his numbers are. I don't think he even comes up on any baseball reference.
Well, I brought up the Sugarland Skeeters page, so let's see. No, he's not listed on here.
Yeah, I don't know if he actually is playing or he's just there.
Maybe he's
like for the appeal.
Maybe he's rehabbing tired arm or something.
I mean, he's only 34. It's not like he's. I think people think that he's like 40 because he has been playing since 1997.
Wait, what?
I think people think he's a little bit older than he actually is because he has been playing since 1997, but he's only 34.
Oh. He got drafted out of high school.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. He was that little. Like, I guess, 7-year stretch where they were the NBA was drafting people out of high school before they increased the age.
Yeah, it was an incredibly smart idea on the NBA's part.
Ryan Langerhans is on this team.
I remember him. He was on the Braves for a few years, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
actually, a bunch of ex-major leaders on there.
I think now we can move on to the tweet bag. It's not really too much going on this week. Well, there's Matt's question. Which team has impressed you most this season? I thought Redacted has looked good. Redacted is pitching well. Redacted is hitting well. I think they have good. They have a good chance to finish first in the Redacted and go all the way to the Redacted. Yes.
My response to that is Redacted.
Yes. Ugh. Yes, this is, of course, a reference to the fact that a bunch of podcasts for MLB teams, for MLB, made by fans of MLB teams, were pulled from iTunes either yesterday or this morning because they said, they literally just because they said, like, I don't know, Gleeman and the Geek, a Twins podcast. And then they're like, ah, no, you can't use Twins in there. And then a bunch of other podcasts were affected by that, too. And that really sucks. I don't really understand that at all by MLB. I know you want to be protective of your trademarks, but it's free publicity.
No, like, I appreciate everyone listening to this, but you should not use this as, like, a replacement for watching the games.
Yes. We do not have insider information.
No.
Just in from Joe Girardi.
I mean, Kenya does have D-Nan on speed dial, but... But it's pretty silly. I don't understand it.
Yeah, and apparently they said that they didn't ask iTunes to take it down, and iTunes then took it down their own volition, but that doesn't sound...
Yeah, I mean, iTunes is stupid. Yeah, I don't know. The whole thing just seems kind of weird to me, and it's kind of annoying that... I'm sure all these blogs or these podcasters can just resubmit their podcasts with edited names, but it's still annoying to have to do. I mean, that was like what we had to do with the Yankees GIFs Twitter handle, because... we couldn't use Yankees in the Twitter handle anymore, so we had to change it to PSA GIFs.
Mm.
So silly.
Yeah.
Free publicity, but it's not like we're getting anything financially from this anyway.
Yeah.
Nope.
That sweet blogger coin is not made from this podcast.
I can't use sweet blogger coin to put into the ATM.
Yes. It's like sweet blogger coin is just this silver.
But if you'd like to donate Sweet Blogger Bitcoin to my to me, I'll send you my email account.
I have a PayPal account.
Maybe someday we can get like Sherry's Berries to sponsor us. All those other like things that only seem to sponsor podcasts.
Oh man. Well, there is one tweetbag question that we'll answer. One of them was there was another one that was asking us to put together a Yankees announcing team using only PSA writers, but I do have feelings about certain Yes podcasters, and I don't want to be like, oh yeah, this writer is totally John Flaherty, because that's just mean.
Yeah.
And as Matt Ferenczek said in the thread, since Greg used to do the occasional broadcast, we'll just say he's everyone, good and bad.
Yep.
Yep.
And, okay, and one question, it is from Greg, what will you do if the podcast is pulled from iTunes? If that's pulled from iTunes, then, you know, we'll just continue to exist and just go from the site. But
well, in all seriousness, there is a way to subscribe to podcasts on iTunes, even if they aren't on the iTunes store, if they have an RSS feed. So if it does get taken down, I could always like do a post showing you how to do that.
This is also valid.
So take that,
yeah.
MLBAM.
Yeah, deal with it, iTunes.
We're all over this.
Deal with it, .gif.
With the sunglasses coming down on Quills. And how can the Yankees improve their infield defense?
Build a wall in the outfield.
Put it, like, on the edge of infield.
We can build a moat.
Then all the balls will hit the water, and then there will be a penalty assessed to the batter.
I think the organization did, without actually getting anybody, I think the shifts kind of do that job. Because what's really interesting is that when the season-end stats are going to come in for, like, UZO, give the players credit for the shift as if they were running to that position themselves.
Yeah, doesn't Jeter have, like, a better UZR than normal because of that?
He has a 0.7 like defensive runs above average just because of the shift, because like the UZR is basically like you're in a zone So, like, when I place you in that part of the shift, it's like saying that the play started, you ran all the way over there and then made the play.
Right, and that's being kind of misleading because, you know, Jeter's range is basically, like, what he can reach from, like, a foot, maybe.
I think someone said if he settles down as a kid and then his kid plays hide-and-seek, all the kid has to do is hide slightly to his left and he'd never find him.
Exactly.
Yep.
So basically that, but the thing is the runs are still there,
right.
You know, they're just getting credited to, you know, to the players. But in essence, the team is just accruing the runs by manipulating their position, which I think is really all teams are doing it, but the Yankees are doing it more pronounced than anybody else. I think that it's not a coincidence that they're doing it while their infield defense sucks.
Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like one of the big things that got the Pirates to the playoffs last year was their embracing of defensive shifts. And that's just the with all the stats and numbers and insider information I'm sure the Yankees have, they have a good idea of how to play pretty much every hitter in the league. So I'm very pro shift, even though sometimes we get these annoying hits that would be easy ground outs otherwise. But I think a lot of times you'll also get like hard line drives that happen to go right at the fielder, in short right field or short left field, where the Yankees have like three people on the left side or three people on the right side, and it'll work out. So,
yeah, because the thing is that I think people don't realize, but the teams have so much more information than we'll ever know.
Yeah.
Because, like,
yeah,
pitch effects data, for example, there are two cameras in every stadium, and one of them isn't made public. So they actually have double the amount of pitch effects data. They have hit effects data. They
field
have
effects.
Like advanced spray charts. They have field effects data. So. Like, for example, I met Tom Tippett, and he's the director of information services for the Red Sox, and he basically analyzes, like, spray chart data and field effects, and that's how the Red Sox set their shifts. And basically, that's how they do that, is they analyze spray charts and hitting tendencies, and then that's how they – and I think and it's good for the Yankees that they adapted, because – why would they shoot themselves in the foot like that when their infield defense is bad as it is?
Yeah, you
so,
might as well try something bold,
you know,
if your infield is going to be what it is right now. So.
Yeah, and it really bothers me when people criticize it when they say, oh, but there's that one time where, you know, it goes to the shift. Yeah, who cares?
That'll happen, you know.
You know, I'd be more concerned if they left it as it was and then a ball got through the middle because it clearly went through the range of a fielder.
Right.
Yep.
Instead of someone just happening to beat the shift by accident, that's going to happen. I know that in speaking of Pittsburgh, I know AJ Burnett was never happy with the shift, and he actually like was cursing out I think Clint Hurdle for like doing the shift because he didn't like it. It he had to pitch a certain way.
Yeah, I think to the naked eye, it's also probably very frustrating to pitchers when you up these grounders that would normally be easy outs, and then they happen to go through the hole because just the shift wasn't adjusting for that. And that sticks out in the pitcher's minds more than, say, you know, the hits that the shift completely robs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a psychological adjustment. I think pitchers have to learn to realize that the shift is a quote-unquote normal arrangement for that hitter. You know, that would be what that's basically straight up for that hitter. Because that's where they hit.
Yep.
So that's, they're going to have to make that. And I think that over time, as it becomes more normal, because I think people eventually got used to the shift to right field for lefties.
Mm-hmm.
And it became sort of natural. And people weren't really upset if a lefty hit at the opposite field because, they usually don't. So people got used to it. So I think that eventually, when the shift becomes more normal, pitchers will psychologically adjust and won't be so beat up if they get beat by the shift.
Yep. That's basically the answer to what the Yankees do.
Yeah.
They could also, I think, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but they could use Brendan Ryan at a shortstop instead of Jeter, perhaps on days when there are more ground ball pitchers on the mound.
Yeah.
So that's just a small thing that maybe we'll be able to see a little bit more of now that Ryan's back. Would be nice if Ryan could, you know, hit his weight, but we'll see.
Or hit the weight of his foot.
True. He did a homer, I think, last year in Boston.
I take it.
Okay. Well, that about does it for the tweet bag. So now we'll move on to the Yankee and the Mitre of the Week. So, Matt F., your Yankee of the Week.
I'm going with David Phelps. David Phelps.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Put it in fine.
Was not expecting to pitch that well, and it's unfortunate, like, the Yankees couldn't score at all that game. But
yeah, that should have been a win for him, unfortunately. But
yeah,
such is life. He held his own against Jared Weaver, and that's a very tough pitching matchup for him, and a very tough lineup too, considering his, you know, Trout and Pujols.
Yeah,
but he was fine.
Yep.
All right, Matt P, your Yankee of the week.
My Yankee of the week is Mark Teixeira, because dingers.
He has been hitting a lot of those dingers lately.
Yeah.
So I think that he has a good chance of making this year kind of what we've seen in the past.
Mm. Would be nice if we got more of the healthy Tex who hits his dingers.
Well, he's also been been striking out less, which is a good thing, and he's been walking more. And by more, I mean kind of like what he did when he was playing for. I think he's walking the highest clip when he was in 2008.
Oh yeah, that was like his best year when he was split with the Angels and Braves.
Yeah, that was a great year. He's hitting at that kind of clip. I don't know if he's actually going to stay at that, but yeah, I mean he's never going to be a high average hitter anymore, but I'd be happy with 250, 375, 500, you know? And I think that he's capable of doing that. And the projection systems pretty much think that he could sit around 130 OPS plus, so I'd be pretty happy with that. Because if you think about last year, I don't think they had one hitter who was, other than Cano, I think Cano was the only hitter who was above 120 OPS plus.
Yeah, you're right.
And plus to share his defense, and so I think that him playing well this week and hopefully playing well in the future really bodes well for the Yankees, because they really needed him back.
Yeah.
And they still have him for, you know, like two more years.
Yeah,
afterwards.
You gotta hope that he sticks around and does. You just have to hope that he'll maintain even 2012 form.
I mean, the thing is I don't think he's gonna age 100% gracefully. But at least if he has a good year this year, he'll age a little bit better into next year and have an okay year next year. And if his year, the last year, isn't great, well, it's his last year. So, kind of like Jeter.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, my Yankee of the week is Ichiro. It's in a smaller sample size, but he's been getting his hits in a part-time role. And that's really all the Yankees can ask of him. I don't want to overexpose him, but he's good in a reduced role, and that's what the Yankees really should have to shoot for.
Yes. In 53 plate appearances, he's walked twice.
Hmm. Yeah, he's not big on the walks.
He's especially not big on the walks this year.
Nope. Oh, you know what? Actually, I'm going to redact that. Because I'm looking at the numbers now, and Ichiro has only had 9 plate appearances past week. So we're going to give it to Brian Roberts, because he's actually been playing and actually hitting a little bit better. Validated. Playing
time. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Hit 350, 350, 500 in the past week.
He hit a home run.
Got a home run, which he hit that. I'm like, oh my God, really? I didn't even know, like.
I did a double.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was
when I saw those
of hitting a ball over the fence in Anaheim, too, which is a big stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually fell asleep before that happened. So when I woke up in the morning, I thought
it was
fake.
Like, what, Brian Roberts over?
Well, first, my first instinct when I wake up from not finishing a Yankees-Angels game is just assuming that they lost.
Yeah.
So I just don't get surprised, but when I saw that, I was even more surprised.
Mm-hmm. But you got it done.
I'm down with that.
And there's a pretty great Socha face right afterward, too. He's just like, what? What? Really?
Yeah, I got to see a lot of Socha face.
Okay, so Mitre of the week. Matt F., go.
Sean Kelly.
Yeah, he's not been doing so well, especially that one game.
The Watts are enough, but then the fact that he had to come back the next night and basically blow the lead was enough to put him over the top for me.
Yeah, that's justified.
Yeah.
I have faith that he'll rebound, but that wasn't a good game. All right, Matt P., your Mitre of the week.
My Mitre of the week is Derek Jeter. Unfortunately, because Derek Jeter has been playing really, really poorly. His defense has been bad. Since May 1st, his triple slash is 190, 261, 238.
It's not what you want.
So, yeah. And a win probability added of negative 0.48. So, he's cost the Yankees like half a win. So, great.
My Mitre of the week is Carlos Beltran. Is he bad?
Yeah.
He's looking bad in the field.
Yep,
and I think he's had like one hit in the past week.
Yup. He's been pretty bad.
Excuse me. He has had 2 hits. He is 2 for 25 with a double. about 2 for 25. Oh wait, no. He's I'm looking at Brian McCann.
He could work too.
Brian McCann could also work. But Beltran is 3 for 8, all singles, and yeah, McCann is 4 for 25 with 2 singles and a double and a homer. So I think the homer spares McCann from Mitre of the Week status just barely, but Beltran has been not looking great, especially in the field. Oh, good, Matt F's back. Your internet tried to take over. It was a little hair.
Bud Selig can't take us down from iTunes. He's in a destroyer Skype connection. Yes.
Bud Selig, no. All right, well, that'll do it for the Pinstripe Alley podcast. The actual Yankee game on Wednesday night is about to start, so we're going to go get to that. You can follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Alley and the GIFs account, PSA_GIFs. And you can like us on Facebook, trying to expand the Facebook, so definitely like the page and share whatever crap we post on there, be it articles, videos, or whatever it might be. Rate and review us on iTunes. It's good to get reviews, and it helps build the site's awareness on iTunes among sports podcasts and baseball podcasts and Yankees podcasts. So I think that's everything, and you can submit to the tweet bag, obviously, by tweeting at Pinstripe Alley or posting in the Pinstripe Fan Shot tweet bag post. And I think that's it. So, do you have anything else, Matt?
Nope.
Just one.
Yes.
Quick thing. I mentioned the game thread, and I have to bring it up real quick. I think the Cleveland Indians, have started a cloning program. Because I noticed that they have someone who has played from the season, which is a combination of two of their best pitchers of recent time. Because his name is C.C. Lee.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about C.C. Lee. That is just funny.
Baseball Reference says he's from Taiwan, but I'm not buying it. I'm on to you, Indians.
I think you just made in a factory. Well, maybe the Yankees should look into that program. They can get, I can't think of a clever enough...
Andy Cohn.
Andy Messina.
That works.
Yeah. Or Mariano Messina. Mariano Pettit.
Even better.
Derek Clemens.
Not Paul Clemens, though, because he's an actual pitcher on the Astros.
No. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, that's all for us now. So, good night.